Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 188.
This week on the podcast, Justice Scalia's death leaves a vacancy for RBG's new bestie. The heartless GOP seems unwilling to help.
And being a democratic socialist is now a legitimate way to win a presidential primary.
Plus, Donald Trump wins the GOP debate by garnering the most boos, while Ted Cruz loses by speaking the worst Spanish.
And Nevada could be totally up for grabs because no pollster has tried to grab it yet.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz must really hate her job because she's hatched a new plan to get herself fired.
And the GOP hates Obama's budget so much, they're not even going to bother to see what's in it.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
This has... Already was a crazy week. On Thursday was a crazy week,
right?
Because we had had a primary and a Democratic debate.
Right.
By Saturday, things really got out of hand.
All
hell had broken loose because Justice Scalia died yesterday.
Yeah. You were texting me. I was skiing. I was like, what are you talking about? This is crazy.
Well, I got a text from a friend of ours who read it in The Guardian, and it hadn't even hit the New York Times yet. And so we didn't have any confirmation that it was true.
Right.
It was just like a random lone story The Guardian was reporting.
Yeah.
And we were sort of like, how do we know that this isn't a hoax? What do we do to confirm that it's not a hoax?
I know.
And then slowly, different, you know, HuffPo had it on, and then CNN had it on, and then NBC had it on. And it was like a rolling, the Times were like the last people on earth to report it. It was like a rolling wave of Scalia death announcements. Bonkers.
Yeah.
Guys, that's the kind of news that you are not sure how to react to.
It is. I saw I saw a quote that I felt like best sort of summed it up, and I can't remember who the quote, it's sort of like a famous quote, but it was something to the effect of, would never wish a man dead, but I've been excited to read an obituary.
Yes.
You know, it's
fair
sort
enough.
Of like, it was sort of like one of those moments. Like, it's obviously like, it's sad. He has family. He's a
right,
human.
He's a human being.
But it's also like, well, he's terrible.
Right.
So,
it is certainly sad for his family.
Correct.
And it's sad for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, his close friend.
Right. All signs point to him having been a very smart and funny and oddly
supportive,
affable person.
Yeah,
and
friend.
And to those things, I say, great.
Yes.
Would I rather have almost literally any other human on the Supreme Court?
Yes.
You're damn right I would.
That's so true.
So,
well put.
There you go.
Yeah. Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote a nice statement, because they were
right.
friends. We had known
they
that
friends.
Before.
They're...
We'd report on that before.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to be a very funny
There's
guy.
There's an opera based on their friendship, by the way.
Oh,
I
know. I know.
But,
but I don't know. How do you see that opera? It seems
know.
Important. I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
But in any case, this has opened an interesting discussion.
It has.
It brought an interesting discussion to the floor.
Right. Because we're obviously in the last year of Obama's term. We're
right.
in the heat of a presidential election
right.
with both parties.
As as many presidential elections tend to be, but especially, right, we don't
yeah,
have an incumbent.
But right, yeah.
yeah.
So, of course, you know, the Republicans will block anything that Obama does. So the fact that
right.
they now
a
have
Supreme
a Supreme Court
justice
to block is just
Well, and they're
for them.
Suddenly trying to argue that there is some sort of reason to think that you shouldn't appoint somebody in your last year as president.
Right.
Despite the fact that other presidents have done this,
right.
A.
As Chuck Todd asked, I think it was Marco Rubio this morning,
yeah.
it was like, are the president's terms over after the third year of
right.
their second term? Like, I mean...
Right, and Liz Warren had a viral post about this that we're going to talk about in a second that basically was like, voters did elect Obama to do
right.
this.
They keep
for
saying
four years.
That they want
they
the voters to have a voice
to decide.
In this.
And the voters
like,
decided by electing
yeah.
Obama to serve a four-year
if
term in which he had the
a
right
president
to do this.
Every single year...
Then it would be maybe fair, considering that someone new would be just about to take office, to,
right.
to even have this talking point. But considering that the longest we've ever gone in terms of an approval process for a Supreme Court nominee is 125 days, we have time to go through that three times before Obama is not the president
right.
anymore.
I know. Yeah.
That's not the right time.
No.
The one, there was one time that an outgoing president's pick was filibustered and the incoming president chose. That was in the case of Johnson and Nixon, and it came up in like October or November. So right. It was at the very end of Johnson's term. His pick got filibustered, and then Nixon came into the office right after.
And there has been precedent for this happening in the last year. It happened as recently, what was it, 1988 or something like that, despite what the Republicans said at the debate the other night. They were like, it's been 80 years.
Let me tell you who the last person to appoint a Supreme Court justice in the final year of his term was.
Yeah.
Their hero, Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
So let's have a discussion, guys.
Right.
It's like, is your hero too good for... Your hero's actions aren't good enough for you, I mean?
Yeah, I know.
It's insanity. But it also seems like if they waited on this, like the incoming president, if it is a Republican, could spend an infinite amount of time dealing with this and never really accomplish anything else.
Well, that's what I mean, we're talking about this, you know, a lot of what the president does in their first year or even first 100 days often sort of like sets a tone. There are a lot of people who sort of thought that Obama probably should have thrown the Republicans some sort of bone in the first year of his presidency.
Right. I disagree with that too. People are allowed opinions.
As opposed to shoving healthcare down their throats.
Right.
Now, so the thinking there is if whoever the person is spends the whole first 100 days in like a very contentious battle over a Supreme Court nominee, that it could just sort of like harpoon the rest of their presidency, which is sort of a gloom and doom way to look at it, but potentially might be the case.
Who can know?
But there are definitely some interesting political, you know, things with this, because like there's that.
Right.
You know, whether the next president, are they even going to want to do that the first day that they come into office?
Right.
Also, if the Republican happens to win the presidency, God forbid, there's still a very real chance, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, that the Democrats may get the Senate back.
Right.
So if the Republicans spend 11 months blocking a Supreme Court nominee and then come to the presidency with a Democratic Senate, do they think the Democrats aren't going to do the same thing for the next?
Well, and
there was somebody on Meet the Press this morning was like, there's a very real chance that this ninth seat stays empty for a long time.
Honestly, I mean, you can filibuster a Supreme Court nominee, so you don't even need to win the Senate.
Yeah, this
if
was
they
not
play
part
this game
of the
for a year, and I, you know, the Democrats, I think, are less likely to take this kind of tact because they like
too.
To look like they govern. I wish that we could play hardball with them, but we never do. But I mean, if like. Who's to say the Democrats will play ball with them after this? Even if there's only 42 of them.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. That's
well,
enough
doesn't matter.
To,
yeah,
that's enough for them
to
filibuster.
That's totally right.
So,
And also, you know, there are the only way that the Republicans retain the Senate at all is if they win in a bunch of blue states that they won in 2010 and that sort of Tea Party
way. Having this battle be the election discussion.
Having, you know, being obstructionist for the next 11 months for an Obama nominee, Obama is loved by the party, that's not going to play well in Wisconsin.
No.
That's not going to play well in some of these places that you are going to need to hold on to your seats in blue states.
Yeah.
So politically, it's just not good form. I mean, it may work well in a presidential primary by saying that you're going to, you know,
these shenanigans are not good form for them, though. That shutdown was not good form for them. It's shutdown style politics.
No, it doesn't work.
It's a terrible plan. In any case, there's also been some speculation about who Obama might have on his short list to replace.
Because
Scalia.
He has said that he's going to do. I mean,
right? He's going
to basically
he's going to try to appoint somebody.
20 minutes after the news,
he was ready.
He said that he was going to do it because, you know, as he should. I think he said something about it being his constitutional duty or something, which that's correct.
It literally is his constitutional duty. So he's couldn't be more right. People that they can think he might have on his short list. CNN's legal analyst, Jeffrey Toobin, who also writes for The New Yorker, thinks that it's a judge whose name I'm never going to say correctly, but is Srinivasan.
There's a few questionable names on this list.
Difficult names to pronounce. They're not questionable. It's a legit name. I don't know how to say it.
Questionable in their ability to be pronounced.
Oh, correct. Yes. he is he's a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals on the D.C. Circuit. And Obama appointed him in 2013 and the Senate unanimously confirmed him.
Yeah.
He's Indian.
Yeah.
Like in the India sense.
Yes.
He's an Indian man.
Yes.
Who's now an American. He's now an American right. too, but he's from India.
Yes.
And he is pretty well loved by liberal colleagues. He's sort of considered similar ideologically to Sotomayor and Kagan. So,
well, and there's a few people on this list of potentials who the Senate has either unanimously confirmed or confirmed with like a lot of Republican votes. So that is a lot of people think that he's going to nominate someone like that. Just because then there's no, like,
unanimous,
and now you can't even do it.
You're
literally, the only reason that you would possibly do that is to just fuck with him. Right. I mean,
well, that's, and it means the reason the Senate is not supposed to play politics with this. They're supposed to vote against a Supreme Court pick if they don't feel they're qualified.
Right.
And they have already proven, these people are already qualified to serve as judges on pretty major courts.
Right.
So if they're suddenly like, but we didn't mean the Supreme Court, that makes them look stupid.
It does.
Doesn't make him look stupid. Another person in that situation is Paul Watford, who is serving on the Ninth Circuit. SCOTUS blog thinks that that's, by the way, what a boring sounding blog. But SCOTUS blog thinks that that's someone who would also be on his shortlist. Watford, he's black. He would sort of help in an election year, they think, to sort of turn out this constituency that Obama carried that none of the white candidates are doing so well. They're just, it's, we're going to talk a little bit about the Democratic debate, but it's sort of a, it's sort of an up in the air time for, for the black vote at the moment. Yeah. But he was also confirmed by the Senate with a 61-34 majority.
Right,
nine Republicans are going to have to answer for
why they voted for him
in 2012 he was qualified to be the judge of the on the Ninth Circuit and now is not qualified to be on the Supreme Court. They're talking about a Latino judge who's on the California Supreme Court, Justice Mariano Florentino Cuellar, I think.
Cuellar.
Yeah, Tino. They call him Tino.
Tino.
Mm-hmm. But he served.
That's what we'll call him too.
That's what we're going to call him too, because we're not trying. First of all, he has two first names. That's too many.
Yeah.
But in any case, he's served as an official under the Clinton administration and the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. He's a background in international law.
He's young.
He'd be the one of the younger options.
Yeah.
There's a judge on the D.C. Circuit, also Merrick Garland, the chief judge on the D.C. Circuit, Merrick Garland, who Yahoo News thinks.
Oh.
I don't know, like, how, like, whether Yahoo News' legal analysts are to be trusted. Like, I feel like it's hilarious that everyone has a different opinion.
Yeah.
But, so in any case, he is someone who was also considered after Stevens retired in 2010. So he's sort of been on a short list before. There's sort of some talk around the fact that he, if he really wanted to muck things up, he could try to appoint Eric Holder or Loretta Lynch.
These are the ones, just selfishly, that I think would be spectacular. Loretta Lynch more than anyone, because I said the very first thing that popped into my mind when he said that he was going to nominate someone, I was like, just politically and for our entertainment purposes.
Right.
And for potential to win the general election in 2016 would be to nominate an African-American woman.
Yeah. Also, along those lines, my mom is really pushing for him to nominate Anita Hill.
Well, your mom is having so many genius thoughts.
I know.
They're hard to
she's really
keep
killing
track
it.
Of a lot of times.
She's found already a petition online that was started to nominate Anita Hill.
I signed it.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I was about to sign it, but I was on my phone. I've got to sign it when I'm back at my computer. That's one of the many genius ideas she's had this week, and I am for it.
Ditto.
I want to see Clarence Thomas be made that level of irrelevant.
Like, if the GOP is going to turn it into political theater, then let's have a good theater.
Yeah. Well, and let's do something where the sort of American people in the court of public opinion has already declared a victor.
Right.
So that we can, like, if we do Anita Hill, it's like we're just going to have, we already know all of our talking points. Like, we're just going to have the same, she's been vetted.
That's very true.
In many ways.
Yeah.
So, in any case, that's a great idea. There are some other, the lawyer who defended the ACA and gay marriage cases, Don Varelli. He's somebody that they're considering. There's somebody from Georgetown who is now the solicitor, who was a sort of an interim solicitor general after Elena Kagan got appointed. They're also talking about who could be a compromise choice. I say don't pull a Clinton and try to compromise choice.
Yeah.
I think go whole hog in. And if you have to pull a compromise choice out of your hat later, then let it be a compromise that started from where we wanted to start and not from where they wanted us to start.
Right.
Jane Kelly, who is a judge on the Eighth Circuit, is someone whose name is getting bandied around because she's really loved by Chuck Grassley. She's like, Chuck Grassley's a big fan. She's in Iowa.
Yeah.
She's an Iowa judge, and she went to Harvard Law in Obama's class.
Right, and she's on the Eighth Circuit.
And she's on the Eighth Circuit, So, she, I feel like, would still be contentious, and we would wouldn't get anything out of it.
Lindsey Graham has a genius plan.
Yeah. He wants us to nominate someone like Orrin Hatch.
Oh, sure.
Let's not.
Yeah.
Let's not and not say that we did even. Let's like not even worry about that.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham filled with mediocre ideas of late.
I know.
Now that his jokester days on the debate circuit are over, it's like he doesn't know
and
what to do with
himself. He's having to go around and shill for Jeb Bush. Talk about the world's most boring job.
And also the world's most depressing job.
I know.
What a nightmare. In any case, Liz Warren had a brilliant Facebook post that hit the internet rounds hard this week.
Yeah.
I think at the end, by the end of the weekend, it had 75,000 shares or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think every single one of my friends.
Yeah.
Almost literally.
No, it was like an endless list of friends. Yeah. Because I saw the post and then it was one of those things where it took me 13 years to scroll.
It was coming from
places.
A handful of people that were, who I consider apolitical.
Yeah.
And so I was like, whoa, this is really...
I know this is going to be an interesting... I think it's going to be a sort of interesting discussion for an election year, especially as we are potentially faced with the option of having a candidate who doesn't really drive people to the polls in great numbers. I think this is something the Clinton campaign could really like use to their advantage.
Oh, I think so,
too. If the time comes where they could be like, listen, guys, I know you hate me, and that's fine. Hate me. But let's be honest. Yep. We need to get someone appointed to the Supreme Court who's not an idiot.
Totally.
Like, maybe I'm not going to do a good job for you, but I won't take away your right to choose.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
But
oh, I think she's going to go there if she hasn't already.
She's got to.
Yeah.
What else is she going to go for?
Yeah.
She has nothing else to go for. So Liz Warren in her post said, Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution says the President of the United States nominates justices to the Supreme Court with the advice and consent of the Senate. I can't find a clause that says except when there's a year left in the term of the Democratic president. So in any case. Zingers. Yeah, zingers will, from Liz Warren.
Yep.
Meanwhile, fun conspiracy theories on the horizon. Already, the internet was immediately all over this. Before even the most conspiracy theory-esque fact broke about the story.
Right.
Because, so, the fact, Scalia was 79, a little rotund, had some health problems. It's not shocking that he would die. You know, people have lived longer, but not everyone does.
Yeah, but he was 79, and he was fat, and... He was a diabetic, and that's what happens to people.
It happens
like that.
To all of us.
That's like the checklist of people who have heart attacks.
Yeah, exactly.
At 79.
So in any case, even before my San Antonio, who first broke the story, reported that the owner of the lodge that Scalia was staying at with some friends said that we discovered the judge in bed, a pillow over his head, his bedclothes were unwrinkled. Now, obviously, that threw the internet into high gear, but even... Before that got announced, Alex Jones at InfoWars was on the case.
Oh, obviously.
He doesn't miss an opportunity to espouse some sort of crazy conspiracy theory.
No.
He had a, quote, emergency transmission on his Facebook page, like basically instance after this happened, saying that Scalia had probably been murdered by Obama.
Oh, obviously. Yes.
Because, you know, remember how he killed Andrew Breitbart?
Oh, I forgot
by
about that.
By forcing him to have a heart attack by himself on a street in Brentwood after
early
drinking at
days.
A bar. Oh, yeah. That's right. That was our first week.
Uh-huh.
We did it, guys.
Full circle.
Full circle. Brought it back. In any case, so you, our listener, should even remember, because I know you've been listening since day one.
Day one. And have filed all of the information that we've told you away.
Right
in the front of your brain
exactly.
To just be pulled out at any moment.
Recall it at any second in conversation. In any case, just as Obama killed Andrew Breitbart, Alex Jones believes that he killed Scalia.
Yeah.
He said, you get used to this. Scalia found, it's natural, nothing going on here, he just died naturally. And you're like, whoa, red flag. Then you realize Obama's just one vote away from being able to ban guns, open the borders, and actually have the court engage in its agenda. And now Scalia dies. I mean, this is hardcore.
Oh, hardcore.
It is hardcore. It's some kind of hardcore.
Yeah.
In that nothing of note has happened here. But
except fat man died.
Right, exactly. It was like... When Andrew Breitbart died and we were like, well, he had heart problems.
Right,
so
yes, exactly.
Is it shocking then that he went to a bar and then died after drinking at the bar on the way home? In any case, he also went
Jones,
on to suggest.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had some other ideas.
Knows who's next.
Yeah. He knows who's next.
Yeah.
We can only hope. I mean, I don't want to be someone who wishes death on people. But if I had to choose between Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas as to who I would wish a heart attack on, though I would prefer not to wish a heart attack on anyone.
Right.
It would not have been Scalia, oddly. Scalia, evil guy, and evil genius, too, which is scary, because an evil genius is scarier than an evil dumb person.
Yeah.
It would have been Clarence Thomas. Poppy Bush's Clarence Thomas.
Yeah.
He's terrible, and also, he's not even offering... Like, one thing that I thought was interesting was that Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that a lot of the time, she would send her decisions to Scalia, and he would give her notes, and he would strengthen her arguments, and he would help her kind of, you know, sort of strengthen and, you know... sort of simplify her argument.
Yeah.
So he was somebody who was like she considered a great scholar in that regard. Right. And because of that, I feel like as he was evil and he was the ringleader of evil on that court, I feel like he was maybe offering a service that Clarence Thomas is not.
Right. Because Clarence Thomas isn't doing anything.
He's not doing shit.
Yeah.
He's just voting how Scalia votes and up to nothing else.
Yeah.
Besides having suspect scandals involving Anita Hill.
That somebody posted that was like, now would be a great time for Justice Thomas to do the exact same thing that Justice Scalia does all the time or something. Yeah, like right. I can't remember what the exact wording was. And I was like, oh, well, that's not very nice. But yes, also do that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So in any case, Jones thinks Clarence Thomas might be next on the chopping block.
Matt Drudge, of course, got on the bandwagon.
Oh, of course.
Seeing all of this.
Yeah, he immediately posted a crazy, like a bright red headline that said, Scalia found dead with pillow overhead.
Yeah.
And it rhymed, too.
Sure
wasn't
did.
Kidding around.
Yeah.
Some YouTube guy thought that maybe the guy who owned the lodge, who had first reported that the pillow over the head incident was a thing, might be responsible because he was once awarded the presidential unit citation at a nationally televised ceremony in the Rose Garden in 2009 by Obama because he was a Vietnam vet.
Oh, my.
So you know how those Vietnam vets are going around doing the president's dirty work all the time.
Yep.
You remember that. HuffPo wrapped up their story on this with, as usual, Twitter was a bastion of reasoned thought with the president the most likely culprit.
Yeah.
Which sounds about right.
Yeah. And we're going to wrap up with one thing that Scalia was right about.
Yeah.
And because we want to go out with some sort of props. And
right.
It has nothing to do with the law because we disagree with him on...
We literally disagree with him on every constitutional matter. And we are not constitutional experts, but also know that we're right. No.
I feel like the way that I would know... how to feel about the Constitution
is often feeling the opposite of how Scalia feels.
Right,
absolutely.
Exactly, yeah.
Although he did bring pure applesauce into our lexicon and Argle Bargle. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg referenced
that
those.
That's
how I know she must have a great sense of humor.
Right.
She gets it. Yeah, she gets it. gets it. In any case,
there was
one area in which Scalia stood for real justice.
That's right.
And that was in the fact that he insisted that the only kind of real pizza out there, the only true pizza, is New York-style pizza.
Yeah. He wasn't trying to get involved in Chicago-style pizza. He liked it and appreciated it.
Wasn't pizza.
But that's a tomato pie.
That's a different food entirely.
Food
he was quoted in the California Lawyer magazine in 2011 saying, you know these deep dish pizzas? It's not pizza. It's very good, but call it a tomato pie or something. I'm a traditionalist. What can I tell you? And that's one area in which I, too, am a traditionalist.
Sure.
One of the few areas.
Yeah.
He also said to the Chicago Sun-Times in 2014, it's very tasty, but it's not pizza. And then also said, real pizza is Neapolitan. It's thin, it's chewy, and crispy, okay? He's from New Jersey, so that makes sense. The HuffPo called that regional bias. What I call that is knowing the facts. If you're from New Jersey, you're more likely to know the facts about what is and is not real pizza. That's
sure.
Zagat confirmed in 2014 in a survey that people think that real pizza is New York style pizza. So me and Antonin Scalia, one area of agreement.
Yep.
Pizza.
Yeah.
Loving Ruth Bader Ginsburg and pizza.
That's right.
There's two areas of agreement.
Now the story that we would have started with had this asshole died this week.
Exactly.
Because it would have been a really celebratory open to this podcast.
Literally. Tuesday night, I get a text from one Brent Thornburg that just says, is this the best night of our lives? And I responded,
and
it is. We did it.
That's right.
Bernie Sanders blew out Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire.
Just wiped the floor.
22-point win.
Yeah.
That's a landslide, my friends.
A landslide. And we're going to get into why it was more of a landslide than just even
numbers.
Number. Yeah.
Also, however, another person who had a landslide win was Donald Trump. So that's concerning.
Yeah.
Though... again, a surprise second place finish in the GOP primary.
Yes.
Kasich.
John Kasich at 16%.
I mean, what a roller coaster.
A lot of people think that the Rubio folk left to him because a lot of people decided because of Marcobot.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but that debate
Here's
may have actually mattered.
How bonkersly those numbers broke down, though.
Yeah.
That's a word that I've just
bonkersly
made up.
Yeah.
Kasich was at 16%. Trump was at 35%, way ahead of the field.
Well,
he won by almost as much as Sanders. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, he did.
It's like that's scary, guys. Pull your shit together.
He got more votes than Clinton did too.
Nobody got more votes than Sanders, by the way.
No.
In case you were worried about that, he wiped the floor with literally every person
All
who was running
others.
In a primary.
Yeah.
Cruz in at 11.7%.
Oh my. Yes.
Then Bush in at 11%. Surprise Bush finish that put Bush back on the radar.
Yeah. Bush.
What's happening?
Bush in his speech that night thanked New Hampshire for resetting the resetting the race.
Oh, yeah, wishful thinking by
a man
one
who got 11% of
that's,
the vote.
Well, that's here, like when Rubio got up after Iowa and was like, they thought this would never, they said this could never happen.
Right.
And I was like, that you could finish third in the Iowa primary. I mean, caucus, they did say that could happen because that was what you were polling this whole time. In any case, Rubio, 10.6% in fifth.
Yeah.
Embarrassing. Christie, after making his bones on attacking Rubio into fifth place, sixth place with 7.4%. He dropped out.
And then dropped out, which this, I have to tell you, I know a few Republicans and one who I work with a lot who I think would probably put a bullet through Chris Christie if he saw him walking down the street.
Really?
I mean, they are mad at him. Because, I mean, while a lot of the mainstream Republicans have some issues with Rubio, it's mainly over immigration, they all felt like, especially after Iowa, that he was sort of like their pathway to, like, maybe having
salvation,
some sort of, like, prayer against Trump.
Yeah.
And that Christie, who is, you know, obviously running against him, but technically, I guess, if you want to look at it this way, on the same team as him, could literally just, I mean, ruin him.
Yeah.
To what end? To get sixth or seventh place and then drop out the next day. I mean, really, I don't know that Chris Christie can honestly ever run in a national campaign again. Because they already hated him from 2012 when they thought that he helped Obama win Hurricane Sandy.
Can he?
Well, he wouldn't have been able to anyway.
He couldn't have been able to anyway. He was never, we have said for years that he's not a legitimate contender, and he never has been, and he's never going to be.
I agree.
I don't care how popular they say
he is. But that, I think, ruined him with the base.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a base guy.
Right, he doesn't have anything else.
So once the base has left him, then he just only has like a handful of like angry people who just, you know,
who
like,
love that he's a patronizing asshole.
Right, exactly.
And that's not that many people, and all of them are in the tri-state area. So it's not enough states. You can't win a state that way.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case, Fiorina, 4.1%. She dropped
out. Gonzo.
Carson, mysteriously still in the race, though he only pulled in 2.3%.
Yeah.
Jim Gilmore, it was apparently news that he dropped out.
Yes, I know.
I don't know that anyone voted for him.
I know.
He pulled it. I mean,
he got like 100 votes.
He got 0% in the primary, though.
Yeah. Other beat him by a landslide.
Yeah, he got beat by Other pretty badly.
Yeah.
And Carson got beat by Other. Oh, no, almost Carson.
Almost Carson, yeah.
Carson came within, was less than a point from, or less than half a point off from Other.
But we're down to six now. I mean, this was a lot.
Yeah,
what were we at? Like 17 or something? God,
we initially were at 17.
Yeah.
Jim Gilmore, by the way, is someone that if you had asked me what party he was running for, where he was from, or any fact about his candidacy, and I mean including which primary he was running in, because I was definitely mixing up with Jim Webb for a lot of the early primary
moments. That's right. I remember that, yeah.
Couldn't have told you a thing about him.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, no one could, but like...
The only thing that I know about him is that quote from the Washington Post when he was running for re-election. And it was that race was like the Bland leading the Bland.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that sums up everything
sums
that you would need
his
to know.
Candidacy, yes.
Here are some takeaways. Many care of the Times, who, by the way, don't seem to understand a moment of what's happening.
Well, that's what's so fascinating. And I still think that, I think some people are at least sort of attempting to get what's happening, and I don't think that they were for a while. I would contend that you and I were the only humans on Earth that knew what was going on.
Like, from day
years
one.
Ago.
Yeah.
Like
before
years
it started
ago.
Happening.
Right. Like 3 years ago, like, to almost the day.
I mean,
when we wrote that.
When we wrote our takedown of
Hillary Clinton which
in
was
2013.
From February of 2013.
Guys.
But anyway, I think that they're trying.
Yeah. They're doing their best. And I think they are starting to see some of, at least, if not starting to understand some of the holdups with the Clinton campaign, especially, starting to see some of the results for what they are.
Yes.
Which is a beginning.
Yeah.
First of all...
Because the exit polls from this are insane. They're crazy.
Yeah. You know, it's already of note that New Hampshire didn't vote for Hillary because this is the state that resuscitated Bill Clinton twice and resuscitated her once.
Right.
This is a state that loves the Clintons.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because this is a state that's fairly conservative and that... you know, is sort of, has in the past politically really been in line with a not Democrat Democrat.
Right.
So
exactly.
a not Democratic style of Democrat-ness. But specifically of note, she lost women by 11 points.
Which is huge. And that was after the last week, which we talked about on the podcast, about how, you know,
they were really trying to reach out to women voters. It backfired spectacularly.
Right.
But this is if she had won, if she had lost the election by 11 points, we'd still be calling it a landslide.
Right.
She just lost women by women, 11 by points. That much. Yeah. And you know, I think that their attempt, their sort of failed attempts last week probably didn't help.
No.
But this trend was already happening because she also lost women in Iowa. And women were who provided her margin of victory in 2008. So she was really counting on that as a necessary demographic.
Yeah.
She still has a trust problem with voters. And I think this is an area where I agree that she does. I don't think that she has it for the reasons that media has been claiming that she does. Yes. And I think part of the reason her campaign can't address it is because they don't understand what it's deriving
from. See, I think so too, because I have been seeing a lot of my Democrat friends who are Hillary supporters been posting. There's this blog that's people have been posting a lot recently, but it's like, if you think Hillary Clinton is untrustworthy, then you are playing into the hands of all of the right wing's attacks for the last like 20 years. And it's like, but no.
Right. It'd be one thing if this talking point was being used against Liz Warren. I don't distrust her because Liz I think Warren, that she like, I would be like, this is a talking point we're feeding into.
Yeah. I don't distrust her because of Whitewater or because she supposedly killed Vince What's-His-Face or whatever. You
Vince
know,
Foster. Like that, yeah. Vince Foster. And I don't distrust her even because of the Benghazi emails. There's not a moment. There is not. The Benghazi thing is not even related to anything that I think about Hillary Clinton. Yeah. I think it's stupid. I think the email controversy is insane. I think all of that is not even something that's in my mind as a thing to think about regarding Hillary Clinton. It's a fun scandal to follow. It's fun to see how she couldn't use a fax machine at the White House. But it's not. It doesn't affect whether or not I trust her.
No.
And I think that that's been something that's been difficult for...
They don't know why she's untrustworthy, so they can't...
They can't fix it.
They can't fix it.
Right. She, among voters who cared most about honesty and trustworthiness, she, 91% chose Sanders, and she only won 5% of those voters.
That's grim.
Scary, you guys. And another group that she did poorly with, first of all, these survey questions are insane. They're the wordiest survey questions in history. But for voters that were looking to support whatever candidate seemed to care most about people like them, sort of identity politics voters, she also lost pretty dramatically, which is a bad sign because this is something, one thing that we should all know, New Hampshire is filled with white people. It's only white people. White people are self-absorbed. White people are voting for whatever candidate they think represents white people. And you'd think the establishment candidate would be the candidate that white people would think represents them.
Right.
And yet here we are. Not even white people feel like they're part of the establishment. Like, what's even happening out here? She also lost young voters bad.
Yeah, she got 16% of voters under 29. She only got 29% of 30 to 44. The only groups that she won was over 65 and what was it like over 200 makes over 200,000.
Yeah, makes over 200,000 family, household makes over $200,000 a year. Rich old people.
Yeah,
cuz unlike Iowa, she didn't even win 45 to 64.
She lost that demo too.
So that's not a great sign. But in any case, so her campaign has sort of been, you know, people have been talking from her campaign about how they were sort of hoping that even if people didn't start to grow to trust her personally, that they would trust that she would fight for their needs, that they, she was sort of in line with their need or their priorities. Yeah. And I think, you know, now they're all talking about how, like, they regret that she didn't apologize earlier for the private email thing and all of these other things. And essentially what it boils down to is every sort of shill of hers that has spoken off the record about this issue has brought it back to this Benghazi nonsense and these emails as if that's the reason voters don't find her untrustworthy.
Democrats don't care about that.
Democrats do not care about that. And, I mean... This is like such a, like, this is why she can't figure out what to do about this. It's like, it's not helping that she's a woman, of course, that already sort of inherently brings her an amount of distrust that's not fair. But she has earned a lot of distrust in her time because she, I mean, she has a long political history, and it's a long political history of like sort of talking around a lot of things while doing things that are not things that Democrats are in favor of. That's why I think Sanders keeps going back to this Iraq war vote, even though it's his only foreign policy talking point. I don't care that people are sick of hearing it. I think it's working.
I absolutely do, too.
It's the moment that our generation came into political awareness. It's the moment we felt betrayed first. And it's the moment where you can clearly see this is a woman who makes bad decisions versus this is a man who made the right decision.
And that's like, what he's...
It doesn't matter that it's that old.
Right. And that's what... That's what he's been effectively been able to do with it. It's not even so much that, like, you know, yes, it was just one vote, but it's more he's doing a good job of turning it into just general judgment. Because and that, I think, is that's why people distrust her. They don't think that she makes good judgment, and they don't think that she's making it based on what she actually thinks a lot of times.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, you know, I think that the untrustworthiness issue was perfectly illustrated by her sudden turnaround on the TPP.
Yeah.
And like, as much as she was not going to win the Democratic nomination, being in favor of the TPP. She has turned around for overt political reasons on everything that she's ever stood for.
Yeah.
That's why voters find her untrustworthy.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of, I mean, maybe she's continued to insist that we shouldn't try for single payer. She's been in favor of it in the past, and she's certainly changed her mind, but she's never tried. She's been consistent in not trying things of her career.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's why voters are finding her untrustworthy.
Yeah.
It's not these, and to think that it has anything to do with these emails is an insane thing that is only going to lose them more votes, because they're going to be going to put out a fire that's not there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I have some wrap-up thoughts that have more to do with the debate, but a lot of them are about how I think that Sanders and Clinton people are really speaking two different languages in this race.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that earlier this week.
Part of the issue here is that Hillary's people seem to think that they need to address these certain concerns because these are the gaps that Sanders has.
Right.
And his voters don't care about these things. They don't care about her foreign policy experience. They care about her lack of any sort of dream rhetoric, basically.
Yeah.
And like, by the same token, Sanders doesn't really need to address these foreign policy concerns. His supporters don't care about that. And the Hillary people are not going to support him after he has his foreign policy plan.
You and I talked about that earlier this week. Like, if... You know, people were talking about how he doesn't have a clear foreign policy.
I could not give a shit.
I was going to say, if somebody asked him for a clear foreign policy and his response was not wanting to bomb all of Earth, I'd be like, done.
Yeah.
I'm in.
I'm literally looking for someone who generally, as a policy, doesn't like to use unnecessary military
I don't need a well-defined Sanders doctrine.
The world changes as the world changes. Yeah. And you want to, you know, like, I'm sort of not bothered by that. But a lot of Clinton people really are bothered by that. And when you ask them why you should support Hillary, they always
proposals.
Yeah. She always talks about this foreign, you know, her foreign policy experience and her foreign policy proposals. And I'm always like, I don't think you understand how little this matters to me.
Yeah.
Like, I want someone who I think is smart and responsible in the office, but that's sort of all I care about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's it. So in any case, I think that is an issue her campaign is going to have to contend with.
Yeah.
Voters did, by and large, say that it was important to them, at least Democratic voters, that the president have experience in politics. And the voters that said that narrowly favored Clinton, but only narrowly. It was 69% of Democratic voters.
Yeah.
And I want to remind everyone that Sanders and Trump get compared a lot because there's similar things happening on both sides of the party. But Trump is not a sort of legitimate candidate in a lot of respects. He doesn't offer legitimate proposals and policy solutions. Sanders is currently serving in the Senate.
He's been
in politics his whole career.
Right. He has legislative experience and governing experience because he was a mayor as well. I think that she often likes to talk about how she, you know, she's a progressive who gets things done Sanders doesn't know how, like, the office of the presidency works.
No, he's got more experience in the Senate than she does.
Right.
More
and in the House,
and she was never in the House. She's never been actually elected to lead any size other geographical location.
Yeah.
So there's, it's sort of like, it's one thing to say that you want governing experience and that's fine.
Right.
I think everyone would like that.
But they both have it.
In the Democratic ticket, on the Democratic ticket, everyone's offering that. So it's
Trump
kind of like,
is literally just a rich business person.
He's a literal nobody. Only 44% of Republicans said that they preferred a president with political experience, FYI. Anyway, they favored Kasich and then Bush. But I want to point out that 44% isn't even a majority of the party.
It's not.
That's a math alert. So that's concerning, but also explains why they don't care that a wingnut random businessman is running the election cycle right now. In any case, Clinton's advisors think that her rhetoric is going to be more effective in these upcoming states than it has been in states like Iowa and New Hampshire, specifically New Hampshire, because they've known about Bernie Sanders this whole time.
Right.
That's why he's been pulling really high there this whole time.
Right. Yeah.
And they're really the state that brought him into the discussion, and it's because they've heard of him.
Right.
I think she's going to be surprised by how quickly people start hearing about him.
I do too. And I think that, you know, the issue of whether, you know, just because they've heard of him doesn't mean that they have to like him or choose to vote for him either. I mean, I realize that there is sort of like, you know, I know that she liked to write that off as being, you know, next door. But I mean, based on the numbers that we just told you,
right,
and the fact that, like, we already know that she won once, a lot of those groups that she got blown out in were groups that she won in 2008.
Yeah.
A lot. And I think the most fascinating one is, we're going to talk about this too, but she was sort of like, I mean, she was obviously running against Obama, but she was sort of like really making like the most waves with like the white working class people. And that's who she was sort of like really, you know, acting like she was sort of like standing up for, you know, and she got blown out with them.
She's
this time,
rapidly
like,
losing
big time.
That base.
And that's a problem. Because
that is
like
a problem.
If she just wants to go around the country and talk about how she's losing all the states that have some white people in them, then like, that's a recipe to, you know, lose.
Right.
That's
lose
what
all the states.
I mean, I realize you have to win with African Americans and with some Latinos and stuff. But I mean, like, you know, those are groups that you need to add to the white people.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, and I'm not trying to sound racist or anything, but I mean,
no,
like,
but
if you don't have the white working class people voting for you as a Democrat in places that you need to win, like in places
so,
like
swing states,
you know,
so
in
many
places like Pennsylvania and in
Belt
places
states.
Like Ohio and in, yes, exactly. In
I
places
mean,
like that.
This is an important
like,
part of your coalition. Well, and this is,
right.
This also points to how we talked about this in the past, but how the Sanders coalition is not Obama's coalition.
It's
a different coalition.
Right. People keep trying to pretend that it is.
People keep trying to pretend like it is. And this is a good example of how it's not. Because Hillary Clinton was blowing Obama away with white working class blue collar voters.
Big time.
She, the Times sort of spun it as like she's not doing as well with them this time.
Yeah.
She's on the sort of, she's teetering on the edge of losing them completely.
Yeah.
She did not win them in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And this is, so when we talk about this being a group that she won in 2008 solidly, want to point out that in this election cycle, Sanders won 68% of white non-college graduates and 65% of people from families earning less than $50,000.
Right.
We talked already about how she was doing
and that
better.
That was
her
moneymaker
in 2008. That was who, that was her, the most important part of her coalition in New Hampshire last time.
Yeah.
So it's sort of interesting to see that that's...
Yeah. You that know, same group of people that we just mentioned that went
broke
for Sanders
strongly
went
for
Trump.
Well,
as
this
you may
is,
imagine.
You know, we've been talking for years about how the Tea Party was ours for the taking. And I know that's always sounded like a bombastic thing.
Yeah.
But I think that this, they actually are ours for the taking. I think that they are gripped by the same concerns as the Democratic white working class. And they are, obviously on the right, they veer kind of racist and distrustful.
Yeah.
But the Sanders rhetoric does appeal to a certain number of them.
Totally.
And it's the reason that Trump is appealing to a certain number of that specific demographic has to do with issues that Sanders is addressing.
Yes.
The only thing he's not addressing is deporting all Muslims and stopping them from coming to America.
Right.
And if you can get beyond that being a fake concern that is a trumped up issue that Trump, I can't with his name being a pun,
I know.
You know, has created, then what you're left with is campaign finance reform and being against the Iraq war and all of these things that Sanders is already addressing.
Yeah.
It makes sense that they're pulling from the same group of voters.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense that anyone is falling for any of Trump's rhetoric.
I agree.
Because despite the fact that him and Sanders keep getting compared, I keep having to remind people that Sanders is proposing policy that is at work currently in most of the developed
rest of the
world.
I know. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He's not proposing crazy things.
No.
Single-payer healthcare is not a crazy policy proposal.
No.
It's not unrealistic, like building a wall and making Mexico pay for it. Those are not the same thing.
No.
In any case, this was also the first election, the first week that a debate really came back to bite someone.
Right, yeah.
We've been having a lot of debates, but they've been fairly boring, and nothing of note has really been happening in them.
Well, and even when something...
But this Marcobot situation, really.
Yeah, that really, it did. And he took the, I think... He took the credit for having messed that up, too, which I thought was interesting.
It was actually a sort of sad speech.
It was a sad speech.
He was like, I'm really sorry. It was my fault.
Yeah.
I messed up.
Yep. I got this.
It was sort of embarrassing.
Yeah.
But maybe the most important thing for establishment media to be reporting going forward, because it's going to help them understand why anything is happening at all, is that the Trump vote is a real block of people.
Yes.
They were talking in Iowa like he was done for.
Right.
He is not done for. Yeah. It is important that the rest of the GOP field figure out how to capture these voters.
Well, he's way ahead.
This is not a legitimate plan.
He's way ahead in South Carolina.
He's way ahead in South Carolina, and he won big time.
Big time.
In New Hampshire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is, they cannot pretend him away.
No, they can't.
This is a real part of their constituency that they're going to have to figure out how to grab.
Yep.
And if they don't, we're going to have Donald Trump as president, yeah. who spent the entire GOP debate yeah. this last week railing on about how he hates George Bush. So, yeah. I mean...
The thing is, though, the risk in figuring out how to get these people risks alienating...
Everyone else.
Almost all other thinking people like in America.
The political kryptonite.
They really are, because it's sort of like you need them to all vote for whoever the nominee is.
Yeah.
But... You also
need them to not be anywhere near your platform.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that they're in a pickle.
They are in a pickle.
They're in a pickle.
Also, a lot of the GOP electorate said that they supported temporarily barring Muslims from entering the country. 64%. Sure. That's too many, guys. Get yep. your shit together.
Yep.
Do not be these people.
Yep.
But so in any case, it's a confusing outcome for almost everybody. It shows that everybody, depending on your priorities, you voted for a different candidate. Different candidates won different groups. There's no clear consensus as to who yeah. is winning anything
on the GOP
yeah, side.
For sure.
On the Democratic side, it's concerning for Clinton because the coalition that's coming together to support Sanders is a coalition that she was relying on.
Right.
So, and you can't, like, she yeah. is trying to sort of, like, be the behemoth of the African-American vote.
Yep.
We're going to talk in a second about how some stories are starting to break that, as we sort of predicted, that vote is not going to be one consistent voting block.
And she's already starting to poo-poo the Hispanic vote in Nevada. We're going to get to that in
yeah,
a little bit,
like
too.
That's a bit of a problem.
I think they're seeing some of the writing on the wall, and I think they're getting rightly nervous.
Well, and one final note that the Times commented on about New Hampshire's results is the one thing that was clear across aisles was... that having a consistent message helps.
Well, and this was what
and she hasn't had a consistent message, so that's, I think,
I totally agree. And one thing I was, I found interesting, and hadn't really thought about, but it was absolutely true, I guess, despite the fact that I really like Sanders. I was watching the debate coverage after New Hampshire, and I think it was Chris Hayes on MSNBC, but he was like, you know, we can talk about how we're surprised that Sanders did so well or that he's, you know, raising so much money or whatever, but when you look... at all 19 or 20 people, I mean, he's including the Republicans, he has clearly run the best campaign.
Yeah. People know what he stands for.
Know what he stands for.
And don't have any doubt that he's about to change that.
Nope.
Concerns that he's about to change that. I mean, from a sort of pure messaging perspective.
Totally.
He's killing them.
No one's even a second.
No.
No one's anywhere in the
ballpark. Not even Donald Trump.
No.
Donald Trump, who can say anything he wants, often says things he doesn't mean to and espouses ideas that you're
That's one thing where they are definitely the opposite.
Yes,
because,
exactly.
Because you don't know what Trump's going to say from one second to the other. Sanders has been saying the same thing since the 60s.
Exactly.
So, right. I mean...
that's the one area that I think really explains the difference between them.
I agree.
In any case... There was a debate on Saturday just after Scalia died.
That was
fucking
so good.
Bonkers.
I didn't see all of this, but I have so many thoughts about this, mostly to do with Trump, as you may expect. Because obviously, but like.
So they were having a debate in South Carolina on CBS.
Yes.
It was really raucous.
It was.
It was because they allowed more candidate supporters into the debate hall than usual. It wasn't just party loyalists. It was the most support. So it was like there were jeers, there were cheers, there were boos. It was like insanity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There were also some duels that broke out.
Yeah.
First of all, the candidates spent the whole time. They talked over each other constantly.
Yeah.
They made rude comments to each other. They were snippy to each other. And then there were some interesting duels that broke out.
Yeah.
There was a Trump versus Cruz, Cruz versus Rubio, a Jeb exclamation point versus Trump. All of it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Kasich spent the whole time trying to be like, you guys, let's not do this.
Yeah.
And that is why he's not going to be the president.
I was going to say, we've left New Hampshire, John.
Right.
We're in South Carolina.
South Carolina is not that kind of state.
Right.
In any case.
This is where you win because you tell everyone that the person you're running against had an illegitimate black
baby.
I mean, that's what sells here in South Carolina. Okay.
Yeah, but Brent and I both just watched Chelsea Handler's, you know, she's doing that documentary series for Netflix, and the one about racism. She goes to South Carolina in it, and basically everything that's said there is absolutely insane for the entire length of her visit.
Uh-huh,
In any case, Trump versus Cruz, the gloves come off.
Oh, this
they
was
have
delicious.
Been sort of tiptoeing around each other because they were both kind of leading their own, you know, movements.
Yeah. Yeah.
Finally, though, Trump decided he'd had enough. Cruz accused him of supporting government funding for Planned Parenthood.
Uh-huh.
So he said that all of the decisions like upholding Obamacare that John Roberts had been responsible for were Cruz's fault.
Right.
And then because, you know, Cruz is basically a single issue Obamacare hater who's ruining lives of everyone. And then Trump said that you are the single biggest liar to Cruz.
Yikes.
And then at one point said, this guy will say anything. Nasty guy. Now I know he doesn't have one endorsement from any of his colleagues. He's a nasty guy. Which is a Trumpism, but also true.
I know, right?
He brought up Cruz's campaign tactic in Iowa, where his campaign told supporters that Ben Carson had already dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cruz responded with, it's fairly remarkable to see Donald defending Ben after he called him called him pathological and compared him to a child molester. Donald has a weird problem. When you point to his own record, he screams, liar, liar, liar. So that was a delicious
debate. That was really debate. Good. This was also good.
The best moment by far of the debate was when Cruz tried to speak Spanish.
And
here's
failed.
A little known fact about Cruz that we didn't know.
Yeah.
The man, the Cuban immigrant's son is truly a Canadian immigrant because he doesn't speak a word of Spanish. Right.
And this was so good too because
this was smart for Rubio, I think.
Yeah. Oh, so smart. And it was also like, it was just like a real like, oh snap moment. Even the other candidates, you can hear like laughing and being like, oh, like, you know, it was like, oh.
Because, so basically, Cruz and Rubio hate each other because they're basically running for the same position in the party. Cruz accused Rubio of saying on Univision in Spanish that he would repeal Obama's executive actions, that he would not repeal Obama's executive actions on immigration. He was basically saying, like, he's telling us one thing and he's telling Univision another thing in Spanish. Rubio retorted, I don't know how he knows what I said on Univision because he doesn't speak Spanish. At which point, Cruz looked over at him, said something in broken, horrible Spanish with a thick accent, and which
not
translates...
Not a Spanish
accent. Canadian accent. That translates to, Marco, if you want to say it right now, say it if you want, in Spanish if you want. Which is school person Spanish that even I could have spoken to Marco Rubio at that debate. And Univision was who confirmed that his accent was bad, so we were not left... You can hear it if you listen to it.
Oh, you can.
Even as an American,
you right before we recorded this podcast, you were like, I want to hear what this sounds like. And you were like, that doesn't sound right.
Sounds like me speaking Spanish. But so in any case, that was a brilliant moment, a huge win for Rubio, who also just seemed less horrible. He seemed horrible, but he seemed less robotic at this debate than he had. So maybe
recovered
because his bully Christie wasn't there.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case, the Bush battles were hilarious.
So good.
Donald Trump decided to take on the memory of George W. Bush and Jeb exclamation point and Rubio rushed to his defense. This is the first time they've cooperated.
So good. I know. They've been going at each other so much.
Yeah.
And this is just, I love this so much. And you and I were talking about this earlier tonight. Like, aside from the racism, like, this Trump thing, I could get into.
This is like when Rand Paul was accidentally making sense. And you were like, do I like Rand Paul, and I had to be like, no, you don't like Rand Paul.
I know.
That's not it.
And I don't like Donald Trump.
No, of course not.
Like, and that's not what I'm saying here.
No, but
like, he accidentally gets himself on the right side of a lot of issues,
It's sort
more than you were comfortable with.
Way more.
And this is one of the leading ones of those.
Yeah.
Because he likes to remind people that it was actually while George W. Bush was president that 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
And while Republicans... all sounded like every single person in that whole entire room booed him when he said it, as if that's not a historical fact.
Right, exactly.
He is willing to He's willing to be booed.
He's not
to
afraid
remind
to be
everyone
booed in order to taunt Jeb Bush about his brother being an idiot.
That's right.
Basically.
I approve of that.
I approve of that message.
Yeah.
Bush basically, after Trump said that the war in Iraq was a big fat mistake, said, I'm sick and tired of him going after my family. Which, first of all, I'm like, your brothers and your father were both presidents. I don't think it's fair to be too annoyed that people are going after your family. They were the last two Republican presidents. Like, that's not them going after your family. That's them going after the last two Republican presidents. In any case, he goes on to say, when Donald Trump was building a reality TV show, my brother was building a security apparatus to keep us safe. To which Trump replied, I lost hundreds of friends in the World Trade when the World Trade Center came down during the reign of George W. Bush.
The reign.
He kept us safe.
The reign.
That is not safe. Trump not bothered. Rubio decided to jump to Bush's rescue and blame Clinton for 9/11.
Yes.
Because he didn't kill Osama bin Laden.
He doubled down on that on Meet the Press this morning.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
That's an insane talking point. Speaking
of doubling down on something, Trump doubled down on this and went even further on Meet the Press this morning because they asked him... Chuck Todd was like, well, are you implying that, like, Bush should have been able to keep this from happening. Right. Like, you're saying that it happened on his watch. Are you saying that he could have prevented it? And he was like, well, all signs point to that he should have known. Like, there were signs about Al-Qaeda. There were signs about Osama bin Laden. Like, I mean, and that is going for, like, because you hear Republicans sometimes say, like, well, we made, you know, a wrong choice. Or, right. like, you know, we went with the intelligence we had at the time and found out later. You know, like, you will hear some Republicans say that. But you rarely ever,
hear them say that they could have prevented 9/11.
Say that Bush, had he just been paying attention, could have stopped the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's
so good.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Kasich finally got stung for being part of the Medicaid. I feel like this is such the most controversial thing about him, and they've been so wrapped up in their own wars, and he's always a guy shouting from the edge of the stage that they never think to ding him for it, which is hilarious. But he sort of geniusly spun it back as a Reagan policy.
Oh, yeah.
Because Jeb exclamation point tried to attack him for accepting the Obamacare Medicaid expansion money. And he basically said it was a moral, he tried to build a moral case for having done it and said that Reagan expanded Medicaid 5 times and argued that that the program Medicaid helps poor people transition to productive work. So argued sort of in favor of Medicaid, yeah. which is a curious thing to do in that debate.
Yep.
And then turned to Bush and said, you know, this guy's Medicaid program grew twice as fast as mine when he was the governor of Florida. So,
ooh. Ha.
He said, snap. It's just a fact. So, yeah. snap. And then they all talked, they all agreed with each other about how nobody should do their constitutional duty and appoint a replacement for Scalia. So, course. It's good to know yeah. that they all agree on something.
Yeah. They all love the Constitution.
They all love the Constitution so much that they forget that the last person to do this, as we said, was Ronald Reagan, right. their hero.
Yeah.
So, in any case, speaking of W.
Yes.
He's on the campaign trail in South Carolina. CNN is oddly dedicated to the idea that because South Carolina is a big military state, that somehow the Iraq war is like not something you want to criticize with them. And that W is like some sort of helpful campaign presence there.
Right.
I don't know that I would agree with that.
I'm
not a military expert.
No. The only thing that I could think that maybe is the case is that if it's a huge military state, the people who served don't want to seem like they served
in vain.
In vain.
Yes.
And so I think that probably a lot of them, you know, tell themselves that, you know, we were there for a reason, and the reason is because George W. Bush sent us over there, and and that's the only thing that I can think
of. Well, and also, I mean,
I think you're right. I mean, if you served in that war, and knowing what we know now, I mean, I think you'd have to do a lot of mental gymnastics to get yourself to like George W. Bush.
Yeah, the last thing I would want would be to have a president like George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Because also, we haven't really been taking care of those veterans once they've gotten home. The only Bernie Sanders is trying to legislate our care for them at this point.
Yeah.
So like, I just don't see that this is... I get that as someone who was in the military, you wouldn't want to feel like you had made this horrible sacrifice for no reason.
Yeah.
I also, though, however, don't think that you can really live in a world where you think the Iraq War was a good idea.
Right.
And that... This sort of implies that you've forgiven the mistake in the first place.
Yeah. But
because it's not that you can't go over there and think we did good things over there. But, like, you also can't think that the reason we ended up there in the first place was the right thing.
Yeah. But, you know, God love the Republicans. The 77% of them still think that they still like George W. Bush.
It's so confusing.
Which is like, what?
I don't know.
How is that possible?
But also, like, what does this mean? Because who are these Republicans? And are any of them Trump supporters now? And are any of them included in the people who are now GOP Trump supporters? Like, it's, I don't know who's in the Republican Party at the moment.
I know, right?
I don't understand. I understand who's in the Democratic Party and also who's joining the Democratic Party.
Right.
I don't understand even a little bit who's currently in the Republican Party. It's so confusing.
It'll be interesting to see how, I mean, we'll never know whether this actually turns into votes unless he does really well. But I mean, I just don't.
But I'm curious about this strategy.
Yeah, I am.
But
too.
I mean, these things seem to be backfiring. These sort of common, you know, sense things seem to be backfiring a lot. I don't think sending Bill Clinton on the campaign trail in New Hampshire was such a great thing for Hillary Clinton.
Sure wasn't.
It just gained her more bad press. It
doesn't look like it's.
And it's not working so well in South Carolina either.
Oh, God.
In any case, the Democrats also had a debate.
Had a
it
debate.
Wasn't as exciting as the Republican debate
sure because
it was a PBS debate and it was really fucking boring.
Yeah.
But also very informative. One of the most informative Democratic debates. I felt like I really sat down and learned a lot about what both of them think about things.
Interesting. Okay.
There was like a whole discussion about immigration policy where I felt like I had been at a seminar.
And this is something where Sanders is trying to get to the left of, he's to the left of her on a lot of things.
Right.
But immigration is one where I think a lot of people thought that she should be doing well with the Latino vote. And so he's trying to
make clear that he's at her left.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
They also, because it was a debate right ahead of South Carolina, they talked a lot about race. Everything was a coded reference to race. Even questions that weren't about race were about race. There was a question about white people. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
Literally, Gwen Ifill asked the question, and she basically was like, there's high suicide rates in like working class white men. Like there's, the economy's been bad for them. What are you going to do for those voters? And Bernie Sanders literally went, white people. Nobody was prepared to answer it, and no one did.
Hillary Clinton went on
about coal country as if most white people live in coal country.
Oh, God.
I hate when they're asked about white people and reference things that only this tiniest percentage of white people. As much as, I think that white people are sort of implicitly discussed mostly in these things. We don't need a special discussion about white people. I would also argue that white people are not just like random Appalachia residents.
Yeah. Much like the rest of the country,
most of us live in cities.
Right.
And most of us are affected by the same economic forces as other demographics. It's like talking about coal country was a curious choice. But in any case, both of them sort of floundered that question because who expects to have a question about white people?
Yeah.
In any case, I think this was a debate where if you like Hillary Clinton, I think you came out liking her more. And if you like Bernie Sanders, you came out liking him more. And never the two shall meet.
I know.
Because I walked away and I was like, Bernie Sanders is a smart guy. And I know Hillary people walked away and they were like, Hillary Clinton won that debate. They love winning. I don't think that you can win a really substantive debate.
Yeah.
This was a very substantive debate. They really talked about a lot of issues in detail, and it was an informative debate.
Right.
I don't think you can, unless you literally get a moment where, like a Marcobot moment, can't win a debate like this.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, and this was one of the, and I read this in a few different places, everybody always does their sort of, takeaways from the debate or whatever, and I read this a few places, is that he is actually, we know she's a good debater. All the punditry class of 2008 thought that she won really almost every single one of those debates with Barack Obama. A lot of good it did her. But I mean, we know that she's a good debater. She has done well in these other debates. And the fact that she hasn't been able to sort of like make him have one of those Barack Obama moments.
Blow.
Or have a, or like really land a punch that like we talk about for the next few days that sort of like has consequences moving forward says, I think, more about him than it does about her, because I think a lot of us, and even in that first debate where we talked about how he didn't do any debate preparation at all or whatever.
He just winged it.
He's obviously no debate hack.
Yeah, no, he's a good debater.
He's a good debater.
Because he's literally winging it at these debates, and he's still doing a good job.
And he's still doing a good job. I mean, there was a specific reference to where, she was sort of like in the midst of schooling him on something specifically about Iran. It was about foreign policy. And he did sort of like, the classic debate bait and switch, if you will, and was like, well, you know what? I'm not going to take foreign policy advice from Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger is no friend of mine. And it had a minimal amount of things to do with what they were actually talking about. And that was the biggest score of the night. And the thing that I was reading the most about the next day was about, they released photos of Hillary Clinton with Henry Kissinger, and they were rehashing all of Henry Kissinger's, basically war crimes. And,
learned more about Henry Kissinger than I have in my life.
And that was basically his out to get out of
a conversation that he was not going to win at the time. Yeah.
And so, he has moments like that in every debate where he is sort of able to kind of like weasel his way. And that's because he's good at this.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are surprised at how good at this he is, because I think a lot of people thought that she would clean up at these things.
Well, we're talking about a man who ad-libbed an 8-hour filibuster, as you recall.
I forgot about that.
In his 70s.
That's right.
Underestimating Bernie Sanders is a fool's errand. At your own peril. That is it's so funny because when everyone expresses shock that he's good at this, I'm always like, I was riveted for 8 hours.
Yeah, we watched the whole thing. I live streamed that whole thing. I didn't do any work that day.
No, I live streamed an 8-hour filibuster. And I don't, like, he went on for the entire length in what seemed to me at the time like a very relevant series of facts that didn't feel repetitive. It was like,
no,
that man is not a man you want to debate.
No.
On any stage.
Yeah, I agree.
In any case. So I'm not as surprised as the rest of the people that he's a good debater, but I'm glad that we're finally getting to the point where we can acknowledge it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that this debate was the sort of coverage of the debate thought that she kind of did a better job of connecting everything back to race. She called him a single issue candidate in her closing statement. That's her new line that she's going with, or she's trying to.
Right. I still can't figure out what that means. I'm not sure.
Unless that single issue is campaign finance reform, in which case, then I will. We've already stated that we'll vote for a single issue candidate.
There are a few issues that he is very good on. That if they were his only issues, I would say that then I'm in.
It could
be Wall Street, it could be single payer, or it could be campaign finance reform.
Those are three things you could buy my vote with.
He's very good on all three of those, so that is not what a single issue candidate makes. But if, let's say he were, then I'm in.
Yeah, no.
I'm there with him.
Don't care.
Yeah. 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 No. But that is another thing, though, is that that's another just point to what you said earlier about how, you know, they're not even speaking the same language here. Because it's like all of the Clinton people were like, yeah, that's the new way in. And all of the Sanders people were sort of like, well, who cares?
Yeah. Like, well, I'm now seeing a distinction between voting defensively and voting optimistically. And that, I think, explains the sort of reason that Sanders and Clinton people can't quite communicate.
Well put. I like that.
Because, well, I was thinking about this. I was talking about this with someone who I think, you know, is sort of veers towards Hillary.
Yeah.
And she was talking about all of the reasons that she thinks that's the responsible choice. Like, we don't want a Republican. Of course, we don't want a Republican. No. And I was finally like, listen, I'm voting in the long game. The long game requires me to vote optimistically and hope that even if Bernie Sanders doesn't address anything on his platform, that we at least showed that there is a voting bloc behind those issues and that we, you know, started talking about them.
Yeah.
Like, that's voting optimistically. I'm going to vote for the things that I'm in favor of instead of against the things I'm not in favor of.
Yep.
And that, I think, is a smart way to vote, even if in the short term it doesn't do you good deeds. Because if Hillary Clinton gets elected, it'll be fine. But a Republican will get elected right after her, and they will be like George Bush. And then another Clinton will get elected after that. And, you know, and they will be like the Clintons. You know, like, well, we can continue in this game forever.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders is offering us a way
out of the game. He's offering a pause from the game.
He's offering a pause from the game or a way out of the game, potentially.
Yeah, potentially.
And as much as that may not happen,
right,
that's fine if it doesn't happen.
Right.
But I feel like the smartest way to vote for your future is to vote optimistically, even if it seems naive at the time.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing that I keep telling people.
But that's not what Hillary people think.
Right. Like, that's the thing that I keep telling Hillary people is that, I don't know what makes you think that her policies are going to get passed.
Right, well, of course.
Regardless. But B, like, I would be up for 4 years of trying Sanders policies and having none of them get passed and having that at least what we'd have been doing for 4 years.
Yeah. Well, and
a lot of people look at me like I'm headless when I say that.
No, but the first step to getting a policy passed is to fail at it once. Yeah. You know, I mean, we're not going to get single payer if we don't try to get single payer. We might get it if we try and fail and then try again, learning lessons that we learned from failing the first time. We're not going to get it if we refuse to
try. One might say we have Obamacare because Hillary Clinton failed at doing it herself
the first time. That's why we have Obamacare. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's not that, and it's not that she hasn't been part of that process to some extent, but that is the difference between voting your principles and voting a strategy. That voting your principles is an optimistic way to vote.
Yeah.
And as much as this is a scary time and we've been fed fear rhetoric our whole lives and the whole world is supposedly a terrorist and we're all going to die in a suicide bomb attack at the next moment, like, I don't feel like it ever makes sense to give into that fear when you vote. That's how fascists get elected, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So in any case, that's the new thing that I'm seeing. Meanwhile, Nevada, no one knows much about much.
No.
But Nate Silver's saying that it's a toss-up.
It's a toss-up. Most of the reason that he's saying it's a toss-up is because there's not one single trustworthy number coming out of there right now.
Yep.
Because nobody really knows how to poll it. It's a fairly new caucus. They moved it up. I mean, not new, but they've moved it up. So it's rare that anyone has had to care about it. I mean, 2008 is the only time that it's really been like a contested state at all. So there's not really – and caucuses are also just sort of like generally hard to to poll right. anyway.
Well, and their, so, like, their outcomes are next right. to meaningless.
So there are just not a lot of numbers. There was one poll last week that I saw a lot of people passing around that was had it tied at 45 to 45. Rachel Maddow did a big thing on this poll. It was, like, funded by, like, some extreme, like, wacko wingnut right-wing group. And the polling company that they used has, like, no previous polls, like, within right. Nevada or very many places. And they also aren't even... the Rachel Maddow Show asked the company, they were like, when are you going to release the GOP poll numbers? And they were like, oh, well, we didn't get paid to do the GOP poll. So it's like this GOP group basically hired like this polling firm polling to, like, company. To just basically show that it was close, probably just to make Hillary look bad, like, is what most people yeah. would think out of there. I mean, it was still a poll, so you have to give it a tiny bit of credence, I guess. They still actually picked up the phone to call people. But, I mean... There's no numbers, and nobody
Here's
knows.
What we do know.
Right.
The Clinton campaign is trying desperately to tamp down on expectations.
They seem a little panicky.
That like seems like a poll right. number.
And I was going to say, because they have their own poll numbers.
Right.
They'll not tell us what they are, obviously. Right. But Hillary Clinton knows what she thinks she knows from the ground there.
Yeah.
And if you are to only... yeah, you can almost glean who's ahead by how the candidates are acting right
yeah.
now. And she's acting like her hair's on fire.
Yeah, she's sending all of her campaign, you know, spokespeople out to tamp down expectations yeah. to say, well, we see it tightening. We expected it to do this. It's totally yeah. normal. Mm-hmm. Everything that we expected to have happen is happening.
Yep.
And we shouldn't put any credence in Nevada because we don't understand. It's a caucus format and it doesn't right. really mean anything.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. They also then tried to sort of unfairly draw a comparison between the demographics of Nevada and the demographics of Iowa.
Which is actually a lie.
An actual
lie. So they're
like
lie. Truly lying about that.
Right.
They declared that it's 80% white. Voters, anyway. The voters are 80% right. white there, which we know is not the case. In 2008, 33% of the caucus goers identified as non-white. 55% of the state's population is... And that was in 2010, which was 6 years ago. That was the last census. Right, yeah.
The white population fell below 55%.
Right. So they might be trying to pretend that, you know, 15% of the population might be considered white Hispanics, but they don't really count as Latino. And if that's their...
Good
if,
luck with that.
Yeah, if that's how they're getting that number, then, like, yikes.
Yeah.
That can't be your plan to come up with a number. So they're lying about that.
And Harry Reid's pissed now because the whole reason that Nevada... moved their caucus up was this sort of vague claim that they were a more representative state.
He pushed hard for that.
He pushed hard for that on that basis.
Apparently, he and his aides are apparently like, if you're to believe the gossip mongering about this,
why not?
Why not? Are pissed at the Clintons over this because it's like, guys, what are you doing here? Like, what, you know?
Trying to ruin everything.
Yeah. So anyway, and she also was supposed to go to Florida, which I think is either on Super Tuesday or at least in March. Yeah. I can't remember. Like,
I don't think it's on Super Tuesday. I think it's in March.
But it could potentially be an important one. She canceled a big event that she was supposed to have there so she could stay in Nevada.
I know.
Which is also not something
that you're doing
if you think that you've got something locked up. You're not canceling events in other places
in more
that have
important
primaries.
Places.
Right. So Saturday could be really interesting. We could get some wild results out of that.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. Yeah. I'm riveted. Finally, something happening on the West Coast.
I know.
If nothing else, maybe we'll have results at a time that is not absurdly early.
Yeah.
So we can really celebrate all night.
Like we can make a night of it.
South Carolina also coming up. A couple of notes about that. We don't have any new poll numbers from South Carolina.
Right.
But we're starting to see some articles talking about how younger black voters are starting to break for Bernie or at least starting to question why they should vote for Hillary Clinton.
Well, and you and I have talked about that a lot as to why people who are our age have any, like, why they think they would need to vote for Hillary Clinton. You know, Bill Clinton has this reputation that started, you know, with, I think it was Toni Morrison called him the first black president.
Right.
And that sort of stuck. But, you know, there was a big NPR story this week about all of these different events going on college campuses in South Carolina. And basically young African-Americans asking the Clinton campaigns at these rallies, you know.
Hard questions about
the Clinton legacy, about Bill's crime bill, about the welfare reform that they enacted in the 90s. And they're being like, why am I supposed to vote for her?
Right.
So obviously these are just sort of like anecdotal at this point. Like we said,
right.
we don't have numbers,
but
I mean like, we've said this for a long time, so I'm not surprised to see this coming to fruition, but it's like, there's really no, and I'm not saying that they were, you know, that there's literally no reason for a black person to vote for Hillary.
No, of course not.
But I mean, like, but there's a reason to question, and there's a reason to not just do it on blind faith because they were the president in the 90s.
Well,
I mean,
and like, also, there's no reason that in this kind of a race, all black voters have to vote together.
Well, that's true.
And that's, I think, something that, you know, when we talk about like, the sort of coalition that Sanders and Clinton are both forming, I think we sort of forget that, like, black voters are all individuals, too. And as much as in a clear race, in a race between people with identical platforms where one of them was going to be the first black president and one of them was Hillary Clinton, I get why most black voters voted for Barack Obama. I mean, we voted for Barack Obama.
I was going to say I voted for him twice.
Yeah, I get it. But in this kind of election, we don't have the same kind of identity politics to vote on the basis of. We really have a candidate who's not running on his own identity at all.
Yeah.
So there's an identity-less candidate, and then there's a candidate who's playing traditional identity politics.
Yeah.
And I don't see voters necessarily breaking down the way that they normally do.
I agree. And
also, Bill Clinton kind of stepped in it.
I was going to say, this isn't going to help either in South Carolina, because he was at an event in Tennessee.
Bill Clinton, yes.
And he said, so it was at a rally for Hillary, but Steve Cohen, who's a... who's in the House from Tennessee, introduced Bill Clinton and said, he said something about, like, while Clinton clearly wasn't the first black president, he was a heck of a stand-in for him.
Right.
And so when Clinton got up on the stage, he said, the other thing, I want to make a funny comment. I'm not sure about this is funny. I want to make a funny comment about Steve Cohen's remark that I was just a stand-in for the first black president. I'm happy to do that. But you know what else we've learned from the human genome? We learned that unless your ancestors, every one of you, are 100% from sub-Saharan Africa, we're all mixed-race people.
Ah, what a beautiful sentiment that has no place in this discussion.
God, why? Oh, man.
This is...
But I mean, this is... I mean...
He should know not to say...
He should know better. I mean, he famously stepped in it when they were running against Obama in 2008 and said some things that he probably shouldn't have that were, I almost said, coded. They weren't even really that coded.
No, they were openly racist.
They were openly racist. Right, so, which is another reason why it's like, do you remember that happening?
Well, I think that the sort of development, it's one thing for black voters to feel some loyalty to the Clintons from the Clinton years.
Yeah.
I think that the intervening period has given black voters an opportunity to feel a different kind of loyalty.
Yeah.
To a different kind of candidate, and therefore it doesn't necessarily follow that they jump back into their 90s roles.
Yeah.
And we don't all feel like we did in the 90s about everything.
Right. Well, and I think what will probably happen in Nevada, I think what will happen in South Carolina, and I think what will continue to happen is that now that we have had Iowa, New Hampshire, and I realize they look demographically different from those places, but what those places have allowed people to do is to be like, oh, I can vote for this other person.
Yeah, I'm able to do this.
Right. And I think to a large degree, it's not just South Carolina, and it's not because the voting population there is black. It's just because they didn't know.
Yeah. Also, did we cover this last week? But Ta-Nehisi Coates said that he was voting for Sanders?
Yeah. Oh, I'm not sure if we did, but
I mean, even the critic, even Sanders' critics are starting to sort of come out in his on his side. I mean, it's sort of fascinating to watch what's going on.
So I don't even know that it's necessarily a black issue there. I think it's an issue of just general humans not knowing that there was somebody else to vote for.
As much as I think, you know, there is some sort of tradition to the black community voting together, you know, in states like South Carolina, in these early states, I also...
Well, they vote for Democrats, but they don't necessarily vote together. There's no reason to vote for the same person in a primary. That doesn't make any sense.
No, that doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't make any sense to expect black voters to do that because they, like all voters, have some varied interests.
Much like there's no reason to expect that all women would vote for you either.
Such an interesting comparison you make there, Brent. But I mean, I don't think that anything that has happened in fully establishment years can be expected to happen in this year.
No, I agree.
Yep. And I think that's a smart way to think.
Yep.
Also, Debbie Wasserman Schultz must really hate her job.
Oh my God.
Either that or she really loves her job and doesn't realize that everyone else wants her to not be in her job.
The self-sabotage that she's
going
through right now.
It's like, it's crazy.
It's really
she's
crazy.
Got herself a challenger and she thought, hey, you know what? I'll just keep on keeping on.
Right.
I'm not afraid.
Let's just, lobbyist money that we stopped taking back in 2008 when Obama said we were going to stop doing that?
Let's start again.
I'd like that money back.
Money's better than not having money.
It'd be great to have it.
Yeah. She just thought she'd change the guidelines so that, you know, they could start taking lobbyist and political action committee money.
Yeah.
That was a change that was hugely popular with voters when Obama made it, when he was running in 2008.
Yeah.
I feel like this might not be the election to go back on that.
This is like the most tone deaf thing that I think that she has done.
Because I mean, even Chuck Todd tweeted, doesn't a decision like this by the DNC, while practical financially, only play into Bernie's messaging?
Yes. Answer.
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
This so clearly plays right into it. It's like how if she wins only by superdelegates, it's going to play into his messaging.
Yep.
This
and he jumped right on it.
Oh, well, of course he did. Yeah. I mean, he's running a campaign finance reform campaign.
Yeah,
among other issues.
Among other issues, right. But,
I mean, this is one of his most important issues, and they just, like, stepped directly into the fray.
But he immediately called it an unfortunate step backwards, and he also immediately called on Clinton to denounce it and to basically help him tell the DNC to stop taking this money.
I mean...
And the other thing that is fascinating about this is that it really puts her... You know, so he sent out a fundraising email, of course, as you would, and to get people to say, you know, to demand Clinton. I think it was probably a petition or something, God knows what. But anyway, he was like, he tied himself to Obama because that is the thing that Clinton has been trying to mention.
That also at the Democratic debate, she said something about him criticizing Obama, and he was like, listen, I'm a supporter of Obama's, but I'm allowed to criticize him.
Right.
He is the sitting president. I get that. But you can't just not question anything.
Right.
Like, that's not a fair way to expect anyone to act, and it's not a smart way to act.
I was going
to
say, it's not a way for her to win a re-election either.
No.
Or not a re-election.
No,
but I mean,
a first election in general. This allowed him to connect himself to Obama and make her look like she was against Obama, which was genius in the aftermath of... Actually, as far as... who won that Democratic debate, that was the moment that I thought he won the debate, was where he stood up for your right to question things.
Right? I mean,
because that's really what we're fighting for here, people.
Right?
The right to question the status quo.
Yes.
That's what his whole campaign is really built upon.
Totally.
And, like, for her to insist that there's such a thing as, you know, Democratic loyalty that can't, you know, where you can't question things that are going on inside of the party even as you're in it, that's how 1968 happens, friends. Like, that's not a way to go.
Yeah.
That's not a way to keep the party together. In any case, in final news, the House GOP are horrible human beings.
Yeah.
I was feeling lazier than usual.
We haven't talked about our
actual politics in a while. But the House and Budget, Senate and House Budget Committees normally take a look at the president's budget.
They've been doing it for decades.
They do it
every
year. They've been doing it for decades.
The president puts forth their budget. They can decide that they like it, don't like it. They always have hearings on it.
Right.
So they can sort of talk to, you know, the budget chief or whoever, you know.
Find out what there is to know about it.
Right. So what do we like? What do we don't like? What can we come together on? Nah, fuck it.
No. They decided not to even bother looking.
Nope.
They're just going to go freelance.
They knew they didn't like it. They're not going
to
They
don't need to look at it because they know they don't like it.
Nope. That's right.
And there were some things in the budget that they wouldn't have liked, but there's some things that they might have liked or might have liked needing to work, you know, needed to work out.
Yeah.
They might have liked to know where the Democrats were coming from on.
Yeah.
So not on their agenda this year.
No, I mean, there were some tax revenue increases in tax revenue that there were some things with climate change in there that he wanted to further expand healthcare coverage. There was a fee on barrels of oil that was going to fund infrastructure. There was an increase in funding to Wall Street regulators. All
things
of those,
they wouldn't have liked.
Obviously non-starters. But also there was a lot of money to fight the opioid epidemic going on right now. There was Biden's, you know, moonshot cancer cure. There was
an insane
amount of money for military spending to deal with ISIS and to step up our military presence in Europe to counter Putin, some of those things, like,
had they
bothered to, you know, crack the cover,
right.
might have, you know.
So in any case, decorum is broken down entirely.
Yeah, it's over.
And if we're going to live this way, I want us to live like the parliament, and I want us to start booing each other.
Yeah,
like,
let's start screaming
I want to have real debates.
Let's get in each other's faces.
I want to get in each other's faces.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that will favor the kinds of politicians that I most enjoy.
I was going to say, I also feel like once there's, if we still had the decorum, then fine.
Right.
Like, let's say stick with that, because that's at least
that's
a thing.
Civilized.
But now, this passive-aggressive shit's got to go.
Right? If it's going to be aggressive,
that's
let's just be aggressive-aggressive.
That's no fun for anybody.
No, it's some bullshit.
Yeah.
In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
We will be back next week.
Yeah.
And
we'll have Nevada
results.
We'll have
news about Nevada. So go us.
And South Carolina.
America. Oh, yeah. So in any case, it's getting exciting, friends. Yeah, it is. Stick with us. Yes. Sorry the podcast is always a million hours long, but it's too exciting to not be. So what are you going to do? we'll talk to you soon. All right, bye.